the First Crusade, maybe 100,000 people passed through imperial domains in 1097, 1098. That was equivalent to the size of the entire imperial field army and most of its garrisons. It was an enormous strain on the imperial budget. And it was potentially disruptive to the imperial heartland in the Balkans because most arrived by the land route. There were difficulties in Asia Minor as well because much of the population was still Greek. And it was just an open invitation to misunderstanding, very well represented by the terms accorded to the Turkish garrison at Nicaea when the garrison surrendered to Alexis under the threat of a general assault. Alexis accepted the surrender, yet he was extremely courteous. The sultan's wife and harem, which were in the city at the time, that's why Kilji Arslan fought so hard to get it, were returned to the sultan with a courteous response, a letter saying, "I don't make war on woman, women and children." Alexis treated the Turkish rulers as legitimate sovereigns. And this was probably looked upon as quite curious and in some cases as treacherous by Western European crusaders who considered them the enemy. And it's odd that the Western Europeans in time came to admire the Turks as fellow warriors, but despised the Greeks, as they like to call the Byzantine emperor and his servants, for being so courteous to these warriors and pursuing a polished diplomacy and following what was by that point a pretty generally accepted code and conduct of the rules of war. So John came to the throne with all of these difficulties, and John immediately saw in some ways the rising Turkish powers, the powers to the east of the Crusader states, as potential allies. This included Ilghazi, the Artaquid emir on the Al Jazeera, on the Great Grasslands, who inflicted that crippling defeat on the Normans of Antioch in 1119, the so-called Field of Blood, Ager Sanguis in Latin. They later came to appreciate the emir Zengi of Mosul, who eventually united all of northern Islamic Syria, and his son Nur ad-Din. Both John II and his son Manuel saw these Turkish potentates as possible allies to put pressure on Antioch and Edessa to conform to the original treaty. The Byzantines pursued a variety of ways of getting these regions back under control. One was to pursue marriage alliances. There were a number of negotiated marriage alliances by John II and Manuel. The details need not detain us, but all of these were efforts to link those princely families with the imperial dynasty and hopefully bring them back under imperial control. In some instances, one of the most ambitious was to marry a son of Manuel and the then heiress of Antioch, Constance, and carve out this sort of super appanage or sort of semi-Byzantine state in southern Asia Minor and Cyprus as a way of merging Antioch into a greater Byzantine state. That never came to fruition. Constance's marital life was nothing short of a disaster, as we'll see later on. Another proposal, another way of dealing with it, as I mentioned earlier, was to show imperial force. John twice and Manuel once mounted major expeditions, which they led personally, into the regions of southeastern Asia Minor, which is called Cilicia, that great humid, fertile plain watered by various rivers, washing off the debris of the Taurus Mountains, and northern Syria. This was a remarkably ambitious attempt. And as we shall see in later lectures, the emperors actually had to put other concerns on hold to do this. It was expensive both fiscally and financially, and as military expeditions go, it was ambitious, and it also tells us something about what I mentioned earlier, that is the rather provisional recovery that Alexis and John made in Asia Minor. They did not follow the military route used by the First Crusade. Instead, the forces moved through imperial territory and concentrated at the southwestern city of Attalia.